Tech itself is an autonomous body of Department of Science and Technology. It was set up in 1988, and Dr. Kalam was our chairman from 1993 to 2001 when we produced Technology Vision 2020. Right now, Dr. Kakodkar is chairman. Probably he would have been chairman of this place also when he was chairman of Atomic Energy. So this Technology Vision 2035 document we released, which was released by Prime Minister in the Indian Science Congress in January. Very briefly, I'm going to talk about this. The document starts by doing a retrospection of what we did in Technology Vision 2020. We divided all the sectors that we worked at that time in four groups, compared that to Horse's Gate. So the leftmost is Galloping India, where we have done better than expected, Cantering India, where we have done along the line of expectation, Trotting India, where we've done slightly worse, and Walking India, where we've done very poorly. We need to do much more. On the left side, you have the galloping part. You have the strategic sectors, space, atomic energy, and missiles. But also biosciences, life sciences, and biotechnology, we have done much better. And the telecommunication that we had called at that time, now ICT we can call, where we have done much better. Of course, not that everything was done because we did something in India, but also because of global technological changes. For example, in ICT sector, global technological changes took place from which India benefited, and India contributed to that as well. If I go to the last part, the Walking India part, the bottom part of that is the waterways, where we had visualized in 1996 that 8 to 9% of goods and passenger traffic will happen through waterways, but for 18 years nothing was done. Only last couple of years, National Waterways 1 and so on has been started. But the most of the other parameters that are there are healthcare parameters, were still very poor. So this is a retrospection we did before we started this document. The main difference between the two documents is the focus of the document. The Technology Vision 2020 talked about India as a developed country by 2020. Now we are focusing on the quality of life of Indians. It's a bottom-up approach rather than top-down approach. So the document starts by talking about Indians and our needs. We put them in six different groups and looked at three aspects of security, prosperity, and identity aspects. And then we interacted with large number of young people. Well, to start with, we interacted with top scientists. I'm not sure whether somebody from here was there, because I was not there at that time. But we found that most of the scientists could not talk something beyond their own area of research. Whereas we wanted them to talk about the quality of life of people, what we want to see. So it was the young people that were more open, and they started to talk about their aspirations, their desires. So we captured all of that. The infographics that shows that if we close our eyes today and open in 2035, what is the kind of life we want to see? And then we have organized all of this into what we have called 12 prerogatives. Six are individual ones, and the six are collective ones. Each of these we have described in the document and set a certain targets for ourselves. And then we have a technology table associated with each of these prerogatives at four stages. Technology which is ready to deploy, technology which is in lab, which needs to go to field. This is the area where India is very weak. We do a lot of work in the lab, it doesn't get commercialized. The third one is technology which needs targeted development, and fourth, which is technology in imagination. So this we have done for each of these prerogatives. And then we have talked about certain areas which are, we call it transversal technology, like materials manufacturing, ICT. But being in TIFR, I cannot say that we should not do fundamental research. So we also discussed this aspect, that fundamental research is also very crucial. So I wanted to make it a point here at least. And then there's a chapter where we talk about India's capabilities and constraints, our strength and weakness, why each country must work within its own strength and weakness and not try to copy somebody else. And then we have identified 10 grand challenges that India must face. The top one actually talks about eliminating female and child anemia, because 60 to 80% women in India are still anemic, and 1/3 to 1/4 children are anemic in India. And this challenge, actually already the work has started with Indian Council of Medical Research, Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, and Ministry of Women and Child Development. So these 10 grand challenges were identified. And then this is a vision document. Then there are 12 technology roadmaps to achieve that vision, starting from education to healthcare, all the way up to ICT. Each of these is a separate document. Out of these 12, four we have already released. The three are the bottom ones that we have released, and medical science and healthcare. We'll release transportation in November, and next few months we'll finish all of them. So this is a set of 13 documents which constitutes a vision document and 12 technology roadmaps. What is the question that always comes to us is that when you do this kind of work, who is going to implement it? In the Technology Vision 2020 experience, we are given money by Planning Commission to get some of the work done at the ground level. But this time, our experience, based on that experience, we are planning not to take implementation in our hands, but work with network of organizations across the country, and some of that work has already started, and we will do the assessment part and monitoring part of this and then give a report to Prime Minister every year as to where we stand. So this is the kind of planning that we are doing. But while doing that, we'll also keep in mind the two other commitments that India has made is of sustainable development goals 2030 and climate change related commitments. So all our Vision 2035 document, climate systems commitments, and the SDG 2030, all three of them we are keeping in mind in preparing various action plans for various stakeholders, and along with the assessment part and annual report to Prime Minister. I'll just stop here basically. But to do all of this, we do a lot of things in-house. We'll have to enhance many of these. Just in case you're interested, we're on social media. Every day we share 15 to 20 technological news, global technology news. We are on Facebook, we are on Twitter. And in fact, we use this to analyze technology from its impact point of view, what is called a steep analysis from five different angles. We also have very interesting newsletters we bring out. These are all on our website. This one is especially interesting, where the race between computer and brain is discussed. This is talking about how technology can disable disability. So this was a very brief introduction to Technology Vision 2035. Let me now move on to the main topic. I have called it My Journey to Brain. It's basically tracing my research journey. When I was in school, I wanted to become a particle physicist. I did not become one, but only advantage I got was this: when I was giving National Science Talent Search Examination, there was an essay to be written on elementary particles, so I could get good score in that, and both myself and Saurindu competed in that exam. When I came to college, and especially in Delhi University, I started to look at astrophysics and, you know, GTR and cosmology. And interestingly, in 1981, as part of summer camp of National Science and Research, I was in TIFR for maybe 2 months, I don't remember now, maybe 7-8 weeks or something like that. And so I was working with Dr. Narlikar during that phase on black holes. So that was till the college level, you can say. And then I went to do PhD at Berkeley. And when I was about to take the flight, one of my uncles, who paid half my ticket cost, he asked me that, what is the kind of research you are going to do when you are going there? I was sitting in JNU campus, few hours later, flight was there. And suddenly I felt that maybe astrophysics is not the best thing to work for the country. And I told him that I'll either work in nuclear fusion or in space physics. When I went to Berkeley, I found that space physics were also doing plasma physics, and nuclear fusion was also plasma physics. So eventually I landed up doing nuclear fusion. So I said that I moved from universe to sun, because in nuclear fusion we are creating artificial sun effectively. And I'll not go into this. So I came down from black holes to sun. I joined the Institute of Nuclear Physics in Calcutta, and although I was a modeling person, but then I realized just modeling is not going to be enough to get the reactor working, so I got into experiments. And I remember that I had big course. I remember a code like Baldur, which was 60,000 lines code. There was no computer, so I had to first work on computers. But then I found that these codes were not giving much result because it's too complex. So I wrote a zero-dimensional code, which remove all the spatial dependencies, just have time dependencies. And using that code, I found that what we had, this was the first nuclear fusion reactor or the experimental reactor in the country in 1986-87. Nobody knew much about it. I found that if I put 100% impurity, 150% impurity, the system behavior starts to come. So that means there was tremendous impurity inside, and I had to clean up the system to get the discharge working better. And what I found that if I follow the standard system of trying to clean the impurities inside, then I would have to import certain things from outside the country. And that would have taken 2-3 years. That time importing was very tough. Even now it's tough. So then I decided that whatever I can get in Calcutta, I will make a system which will work on that. And based on that, actually, I did something very interesting thing, and actually which worked, and it got published in Review of Scientific Instruments. This was, I'm not going into details, but I put a lot of transistors in parallel, put a singleton primary, which, and so on. I'm not going into technical details. But actually it works, it's still working. So you can see this one, I put additional one, the yellow one there. And so I got the discharge to become clean, the discharge behavior improved. Then I had to the plasma. What happens, plasma goes up, the current goes up and then comes down. To maintain it, we did not have a system. So then I developed another system there, which will keep it flat, which meant that I had to actually create a whole power supply system. So this side, this particular experimental reactor was built by Toshiba in Japan. So right hand side is Toshiba, left side, all of this I had to do. where I put thousands of capacitors to give the right kind of electrical impulse. And eventually then I could get it to be very nicely to become of international standard. And then around 94, 95, I was requested by Institute for Plasma Research, which is the main nuclear fusion center in the country, to move to Gandhinagar to help with their ongoing work. Now when I went there, of course I was aware, this was the first tokamak that was built there called Aditya. It was a much bigger size than the one in Science Institute, but it was not working. So now 89 it got the first discharge, 95 I joined, 6 years it was not working. Luckily, when I got a chance to get this to, I could get to do experiments on this, in about 5 days I could get it to work. And then I was made project leader of this. So then I started working with this. But very quickly we ran into a problem, and I thought I'll just describe that, because these are problems that you cannot learn in textbook. And one problem that we faced was there was a 1.5 ton solenoid type magnetic coil sitting in the right center of the machine. So the whole machine is assembled around that. This was right in the center, and the insulation failed of that. And people told me that if you open the whole machine, it will take 2 years to open it up and put it back again, or you open it, you'll never put it back. Then I saw a picture, and I had a thought that only way I can stop this whole thing and I can do it in a very short time was to, this is the coil from the top. I removed some cover there. If I can lift it without being able to hold by anything, so I have to lift something, holding this chair, but there's nothing to hold it with. So what I decided was that I'll expand something inside here and by friction try to pull it up. So I sent some people to actually get a brake shoe of a vehicle which fits the inner diameter, and we put it across this, we put this brake shoe and put it inside this. We expanded this, but we had no idea whether how much pressure should be applied. We were not measuring it. I was standing on the top and I heard a little crackling sound. My heartbeat stopped for a moment, and then I said, okay, let's stop and try to pull it. So we put ropes, and with the crane we started to pull it. There was a chance that this might slip, or the coil may go up a little bit and then slip and it will fall and it will get damaged completely. So we took certain precautions, but we found that it started to move up slowly and there was no danger. And then eventually once we had a little bit of gap, then we could carry it forward, and you can see we're taking it out. And finally it was brought down, and successfully within 15 days we could take it out and then of course repair and then put it back. And then after that we started to see much better performance of the machine. So this is one very interesting example. I worked here till 2002. I was project leader of this, and a new machine that was coming up, superconducting tokamak, it's called SST1. Now it's just started to operate for the last couple of years. Then I started to also work. Now these things are not necessarily in chronological order, but I'm trying to put it in a nice way that I'm starting from universe to sun to moon. So I was working on Chandrayaan 2 mission, and the first work we started to do was looking at trying to find water in the permanently saturated region of moon. Okay. This was, we started working around 2007, 2009 we got funding, but then within a few months time after getting funding, the mission plans changed. This was the Indo-Russian collaboration, and the Russian part was getting changed. Here actually we are planning to throw little balls inside those permanently shadowed craters which never see sunlight, so temperatures are minus 200 degrees centigrade. And you can see, for example, one of these crater diameter is something like 19 kilometer and depth is 2 kilometer. Nobody can go inside, even robots cannot go inside. So we decided that we will throw these balls which are sensing, processing and communication capability. They will form a network. Wherever they fall, they'll try to detect water, and we're trying to develop the sensors also needed for this purpose. They'll form a network, send the data back and die. So within 15-20 days, they will, sorry, not days, 15-20 minutes, they will die, but only thing they had to do was to communicate whether whatever they have found at that particular location where they landed. But as I said, that even before we could make substantial progress, the mission plans changed. And 2010 March, I got a request from Chandrayaan 2, mission director Anadurai, that can you make a complete package which will do all the experiments on the moon after Chandrayaan 2 lands on the moon. This was a single system which had to do many things, including going 1.5 meters deep into regolith lunar surface, collecting samples, analyzing samples, allowing the rover to be navigated, measuring thermoelectric properties, seismic activities and so on. So it was a number of things he had made a list. First I was very surprised why he wanted me to do it. And then I had discussion with them and then I saw it was serious. In fact, I don't know, you were not in Nagpur summer camp, okay. Another colleague of ours from IIT Bombay, Sri Kumar, he is now Director of Indian Astrophysics. He called me up and said that this is what we have to do. I said that you are joking. Why ISRO should be giving me? I'm outside the system. But they said, no, we believe that only you can do it. So the requirement was 20 watt of power and only 5 kg of load. You can imagine you have to drill 1.5 meters. Even a normal drill machine consumes 1500, 2000 watt. This was only 20 watt. And if you drill 1.5 meters, you can imagine the weight of that motor and everything. And of course, there are many other things to be done. Fortunately, we could come up with a design which looks something like this. This was to actually go and do, it's not a normal drilling machine, it's called impact hammering. So it collects energy and it's just like, when we hammer, we move our thing and they do. And then again, we gain energy and do. So something like that. It was an impact hammer. It's a slower process, but within the 20 watts of power, it can actually do it. It had many things to do, including grinding of rocks. This is X-ray spectrometer. Everything was included in this. Along with this cricket wicket lookalikes, these are things which will go and monitor seismic activity. So they were to be embedded into the lunar surface. So of course, this design was nicely done, but unfortunately, it did not get the funding. But they kept coming back after every few months that, can we take it up again? And the last day to contact me was 2012 when I was about to move out. I passed on all of this to Space Applicant Center, but I think not much has happened. So then I moved from Moon to Earth. Okay. The first work we started doing was with agriculture. Okay. I'll not go into that detail. Then we picked up wildlife. So with Wildlife Institute of India, Dehradun, we did number of projects. And Saurandhu has some interest in this because that you have written that your wife has interest and so you got interested. We did number of very interesting projects we were working on. One was to monitor swamp deer or barasingha. This had actually disappeared. Otherwise, they used to migrate from the Uttaranchal region to Nepal all the way. Somewhere down the line in the Uttar Pradesh, they were killed and so on. So for a long time, they were disappeared. But they, in around 2003, 2004, they were rediscovered in the Dehradun area or Uttaranchal area. So I think I had gone in 2006 when we saw about 100 of these in open space. So what we did in this particular case was that we were planning to put something on the neck of the animal, which is a little GPS. It will record its own location. And then it was animal-to-animal communication that was taking place. So I record my own data, including the location and few other parameters like ambient temperature, light, humidity, and also the neck angles. And then when I come in communication with another animal carrying a similar kind of device, then we transfer data to each other. And then as we keep moving around, if one of us comes close to a receiving station, all the data is transferred. So this way we could actually avoid the cost of using satellites, which are very expensive, the device is expensive, the communication is expensive. So make it all completely surface communication and make it much cheaper, both the device wise and the communication part. This is the testing we're doing in the cow for this, actually, same device. And this is connected to Google Map in real time. Actually, this is 24-hour movement of cow. I was in this campus here, so we picked up the cow which was roaming around. This particular cow that I am showing you is named Shyamli. There was one we tried whose name was Rampyari. The Rampyari one was not successful, not because of her mistake, it was because of our mistake. But the next one, the Shyamli one, it was successful. So Shyamli gets the name, the Rampyari remains in the background because, we only count successes. But of course, you build on the success. So these are my students working with that. The second project we did was to look at a very cute looking animal, hill turtle. Normally we think of turtle, actually we think of water. But this is a hill turtle which doesn't go into water actually. It was in the forest, the Wildlife Institute campus, they used to be there. It goes in hibernation. Actually we don't even know it goes into hibernation. It goes inside somewhere, we don't know what happens inside. So here actually we are trying to monitor its movement and also what happens when it goes underground. And in this case I can't put a GPS on this. It is a very small weight. Of this only, I can put only 20 gram device. So in this case, we're putting a radio transceiver on this and using radio transceivers communication to co-locate each of these and also putting additional sensors to monitor its movement. And if I know the location with the digital map, I know what kind of food is available there, so we can actually know what kind of food it is eating. And when it goes inside, one of the issues was whether it really hibernates or it goes into some kind of deep sleep mode. Using accelerometer, we can figure out that what kind of activity is doing when it goes inside, because nobody knows what goes on inside. So this is the kind of work we're doing there. And then, of course, how could we miss out the tiger? So the tiger part, actually, what we did was to, you cannot put something on the neck of tigers, not such an easy task to tame a tiger. So what we did was using what is called a camera trap, where actually you take a picture of the tiger, and each tiger's stripe is unique. So if you take a picture of the stripe, from there you can identify which tiger it is. So it's like like a fingerprint. In this case, but we have to make sure that we don't disturb the tiger while we're taking the picture, neither by making sound or using visual flash. So we use infrared system, and actually we could come up with this. So this is a passive infrared sensor which detects tiger's movement. Of course, it cannot distinguish between tiger or human being, but in the cold forest, nobody else other than tiger moves, especially in the night. And this is a picture we took in Ahmedabad Zoo of the tiger, and the stripes, we had to improve a little bit, but still quite clear. So this was to actually monitor the tiger. The fourth one was to monitor very interesting species called purple frogs. These purple frogs were discovered in India around 2003, if I remember correctly. It was considered to be a new species, because this remains mostly underground, except from in the monsoon period when it comes out for mating purpose. But when this was discovered, later on it was found that Suriname also had a species which was a cousin of this. And that made the fact that this has survived for millions of years when continents were together. So this became a very important discovery. But of course, you can see that the colors are slightly different. This has a designer skin look-alike, and this is a very dull skin. So here actually we're trying to monitor through acoustic sensors, like you're trying to monitor the sound and trying to detect where they're coming out, when they're coming out, and so on. Again, I'll not go into details. Okay. This one, I'm sorry, this is a project that we did not take up, but today I was reading newspaper or something, so I thought I'll share. This was the Indo-Australian project that there was a team of from India, which I was heading, and there was a team from Australia, which was working on this, to monitor coral reef and looking at global climate change, how it's impacting this. I'll not go into details of this, but bleaching was one of the issues that was being looked at. Here is a hybrid sensor network where you go into depths of the ocean and as well as connect horizontally. Today I was just seeing this news, it's saying Great Barrier Reef pronounced dead by scientists. Exactly the problem that we were trying to look at that time. It's not 100% dead, but 22% of them seems to be dead. And unfortunately we didn't get funding for that particular one. And so I'm feeling sad today that, you know, this was a joint industrial project, and exactly we were going to work in Great Barrier Reef and Lakshadweep in India. Unfortunately, you can see the impact is already happening. So then from Earth, I moved to body. Okay, there's some disclaimers here, because I'm not a medical person by any means. Our work started with a student project where we started to look at a girl who did not have finger movements. She had cerebral palsy. She could not see a restricted finger movement. And due to this, she could not perform many things that we take it for granted, but she still passed class 10. So my students actually went to see her and find out how she's operating and so on. So one of the things she was doing was to operate television, but she didn't have a good way to operate a television because she could not press the remote control button. So we said that let's try to get her to operate a remote control, operate a TV. We developed a hand gesture based system so that when she moves her hand up, the television channel goes up, television channel goes down, volume goes down, volume goes up. So that's how we started the work. This is in Ahmedabad Blind People Association. We're testing this device. This girl Kajal in Ahmedabad, Paldi area. This girl Parvati. This boy Akshat in Patna. We started test. You can see the very simple thing with her hairband. We're putting a PCB and all that testing. Then when we started to get the TV to work, then people told us, why not light, fan, air conditioner, music system? So we made sure that with a single system you can operate everything that was there in the room. And then later on I came to know that it was called environment control system. Environment control system. So what we had done actually was a hand gesture based environment control system. We got awards for this, but also got some funding. So this was the first device that was formally made. And there was another version of this which is more flexible. I'm not going to details of this, by which we could operate up to four equipments in a room. And you did not have to do any finger movement or anything like this. This is, you can see this gentleman, this boy, his name is Parth in Ahmedabad, he's trying it out. This boy, Sumit, his brother Rohit, both of them are trying this out. They used to love to watch cricket, but they cannot even sit down. So using this, they could, I think the World Cup was going on, they started to be able to control the TV by themselves. This girl, Neha from Delhi, if I see her smile, actually it reminds me, when first time I met her, she was 16, 17 years old. She cannot speak, she cannot move. Even she doesn't have a control over her hand movements. When she moves her hand up, it goes something like this in a jerk. If she keeps her hand, she thumps it hard. So she was dependent on somebody else. She used to sit on a wheelchair, and to operate a TV, she needed somebody else. Now all of us know that, you know, you can't keep on watching the same channel, people, we keep changing. She also wanted, but she needed somebody else to do it. So once we gave it to her and she could operate the TV, her first reaction was to throw out everybody from the room. So from complete dependence to independence, within 10 to 15 minutes, the science and technology could change her life. It changed my life. I started to devote much more time on this area, and I'm going to spend most of my talk in this, rest of the remaining time. This is in Chennai. I moved around the country. For whatever work I was going, I was meeting various people through social networking, hospitals. I came across many problems, but the interesting issue or challenging part was that each person has a unique problem. So if I take two patients of cerebral palsy, their condition is completely different. So you cannot find one solution which will help millions. You have to customize, you have to come up with new solutions for each person's need. I don't have time to go into details, but you can see there's a whole list of things people kept asking me. We have a school in Patna that my family is associated with, and I think we started in 97. My brother and sister are fully devoted to this now. I saw this slogan, count the ability, not the disability. Focus on what the person can do rather than what the person cannot do. Normally what happens, we say that this person doesn't have a hand or this person doesn't have a leg. Let's look at the person may not have one hand, but the person has another hand and two legs. So focus on the ability of the person, not on the disability. For example, this girl, Sarita Dwivedi, she lost both her hands and one leg in a childhood accident. And when I came in touch with her, she wanted to be able to move by herself using a wheelchair. So we could actually get the wheelchair to be modified. So now the joystick sits in the armrest. We moved it to the leg so she could start to operate. In fact, today morning I was talking to her because Air India, she was carrying this and coming to Bombay and this wheelchair was damaged. So she doesn't have one. Today morning I was checking with her what is the condition. She's saying that Air India is about to pay her damages, but in this period she's not able to use that. So I said that let me look at the ability of a person, whether it's hand movements, leg movement, head movement, or voice, eye movement, or eye blink. For example, one mother, this girl's name was also Neha Agrawal, her mother told me that she only communicates through her eye movement. So eye movement or eye blinks, facial expressions, conscious thought, muscle movement, and few other things I have made. And the right side, what you see that these abilities are on the left side, the right side you have technology to use that ability that person has. The green dots that you see are the ones where we have made the device, given it to user. Yellow means done in the lab, white means work is going on. And there are a couple of other things that we have added. The one that I'm going to focus on is the BCI part, brain computer interface part, which I'm showing here in three of these abilities here. Now using those abilities, we started to first, you know, we did with light, fan, TV, computer, but also with through speech synthesis, we could make people speak. If I remember correctly, 1981 when I was here, somebody was working on speech synthesis in TI for at that time. Of course, you can operate wheelchair. People ask that can we open a door, open the gate of the house, operate a geyser, open a water tap, because many of them are not able to do this task. But what was very important was to be able to operate simple electric machinery, because what I found was that if you are economically productive, the society respects you, family respects you. If you're not, you're left in the corner of the house. So employment, economic employment was a very important part. Being able to operate a simple electrical machinery meant that I could operate a drill machine, or I could operate a security gate and so on and so forth. Then I'll become, you know, employable. In fact, this was covered in the employment news. You can see May 2013 was the front page news, which covered this as how you can make a person with disability employable. And that is a very important aspect of work. Touch screen came, we could make many things, like for example, this is a very simple one, this app that you can download from Google Play. There are many people not able to speak. Just by touching the icons, it will speak out whatever they wanted to say. For example, if they're hungry, they can, you know, touch on this and it will say that I'm hungry. And you can adjust the language, which in fact we have in three languages, in Hindi, English, and Gujarati. And you can also do many things. I don't have time to go into details. In fact, I have it on my mobile. Today only I got a request. Somebody from Bombay wants this, and tomorrow they're going to meet. They wanted to come here, but I said that tomorrow it will be easier in Juhu. I'm there, so they will come and meet me. In fact, another Air India pilot, she contacted me a few days back. Her father was in condition, not able to communicate, and she is starting to use this. So it's a very simple app. It doesn't need much, but very it could be used. I'm not going into details. This girl's, she has gestational cerebral palsy. She was the first person I met who had cerebral palsy, and the first person I tried with. And after 3 years, she came back to me, and then we got her to do things. I don't have time to go into details. This is a newspaper article on this. This lady from Calcutta in the Institute of Cerebral Palsy, she teaches, but she cannot speak, she cannot even sit straight. We made something for her. You can see the smile on her face. This girl, Ganga, from Calcutta. This boy, Hitans, from Mumbai. This boy, again, in Mumbai itself, he's learning alphabets. Many children are autistic. They love electronic gadgets. They can learn from electronic gadgets, not from people. But the other thing he's doing is actually operating things around him through the touch screen device. Let me come to the brain one. Brain-computer interface work has been going for nearly 40, 50 years. Of course, cochlear implant is a good example of that. But EEG has been used for brain-computer interface related studies for a long time. EEG was discovered nearly 90 to 100 years back. Doctors normally interpret this in an offline manner, but today, because of technological developments, it's become possible to analyze the EEG waves in real time. And then add wireless communication to this, we started to get neural headsets, which are very cheap, they're convenient because they were made for playing computer games. So what we did was to take advantage of this. It's costing over $300. In 2011, I could get the first device. And we started to see how I could use this to make people who had absolutely no way to communicate or operate things, because there's no hand movement, no voice, no legs movements, and use this. So we did this. For example, this is my office in my previous university. We were testing this device in 2011. I remember on 1st July 2011, I put on YouTube a video showing that through my blink of my eyes or through my smile, I could control things in the room. And then the technology was done. I was looking for a user. This was a technology push, not technology pull. I didn't have a user. Most other cases I had a user. In this case, we had the technology, but not a user. So I was looking for a user, and then I came across through Rashmi Bansal, who is a very famous author. Her father was here, Professor Agrawal. He was also involved in the planetary mission. I forget his full name. So Rashmi Bansal is a very famous author. She did MBA from Ahmedabad, 93. She put me in touch with one of her batchmates, Suresh, who also was in finance. He had a brainstem stroke in 1999 at the age of 32. And since then, he lost his voice, hand movement, leg movement. He could not communicate except limited communication through blink of his eyes. He could hear, he could see. So he could take input, but he could not express. So about 4.5 years back, we provided him this brain-based device, which kind of changed his life. His wife wrote to me that we have given him a second life. Let me show you what we did in that time. This historic video, because here what we are showing is that we are capturing his head movement through a gyro sensor, using the EEG waves to capture his eye blinks. We put a on-screen keyboard. The head movement, left, right, up, down, is moving the mouse cursor. Whichever character he wants to type, he takes the cursor there and blinks his eye. The eye blink is mapped to the left mouse click. So that way he can start to type. It's just like moving the mouse and clicking the left mouse. So he's starting to use. So first thing he's typing after 13 years. You know what? He's typing his wife's name. Jayasri is his wife's name, Jaya. He's writing those four letters, Jaya. It was very difficult for him because his head was shaking. But finally, even after 3 to 4 minutes of trial, he could write. You see, he's written J. And eventually he completes it. And then slowly he learned to use this device in a better way. Unfortunately, the device broke after 2 years. We replaced it. Again, it has broken. And today is 14, 15. Tomorrow we are getting the new device. We'll give it to her. his wife, and again we'll set it up again. Next day we showed him how he could operate other things in addition to computer. For example, in this case he's going to put on the light bulb with blink of his eyes. You can see the smile. He'll put it on again, and you can see the smile on his face. And if you go towards the end of this video, he almost burst like a child laughing, you know, because of the happiness he has to doing very simple things like this. Then he improved the system. I wanted to do many more things, but I did not get time. Some of you can take it up if you're interested in this. This is after 1 month the system was improved, so that, and he actually regularly writes blogs. This was a newspaper article that was published, although we did not want this to be published in newspaper until they were ready to do that. Unfortunately, the journalists, they're always hurry to publish something. They promised me they will not publish it without family permission, and they actually published it. Then Rashmi Bansal, next day she wrote, she, so all of us have been quiet about this. Then when Rashmi saw that it's already out in the newspaper, then she wrote this article in a blog, "Do You Believe in Miracles?" But the most interesting part was Suresh writing this blog himself, saying, "I can type." And his actually batchmates have set up a trust for him to support him financially. And he said that, "If I had told you earlier that I can type, you would laugh at me. But today with pride, I can say that I can type." And it's a very long story that he wrote. And regularly now he writes blogs without anybody's help. If you want to be interested, you can go to ksuresh.blogspot.in, or you can go to my blog, ranjan.in, where all of these are linked there. This we tried to give him a birthday gift on 6th April 2012. Through this he can speak actually exactly like what the Stephen Hawking uses, the same software. The way he types is different, but the software he's using, same software which does the speech synthesis part. There's another lady from Bombay actually, Charu Khandal. She was chief animator of a movie, Ravan, that many of you might have seen. I've still not seen it, but what I heard was that the animation was the strong point of that, everything else was probably weak. This girl, Charu, was only 26 years old. She was chief animator of this. The movie received an award for animation. She went and received the award, I think it was 23rd April or 23rd March 2012. After 2 days, she gave a party to celebrate that award. And then after the party was over at midnight, around 12 or 1 in the midnight, she started going back home in an auto rickshaw with her sister Mona and her boy Vikram, when a drunk driver hit them from back. They said, come in media in a big way. There was a lot of protest in Mumbai against drunk driving. She went into coma. The boy was also very severely injured. The sister Mona was not that injured. They were admitted into Koklaben Hospital. And after about 10 weeks or so, I had gone to Koklaben Hospital to demonstrate what we were doing, because the doctors told me, although I knew them, they said they don't understand what we are doing. So if I come to Bombay sometime, I should visit them and do a real live demonstration, then they will understand. That time, it was I think 8th June 2012 or 9th June 2012, when I went to Koklaben Hospital, when they put me in touch with her. At that time, she recovered to the extent that she could speak and she could move her head, but neck down she was paralyzed. So she had C5-6 injury in the spinal cord, neck down she was paralyzed. Within 2-3 minutes, she started type by herself because she didn't have hand movement and so on. And then she started to actually play games, which I did not have. Then she started to do painting, but she was an animator. So I promised her that whatever condition you are, I'll get you to do animation back again. Unfortunately, she is still not in a condition where she accepts her condition. She feels that she would be improving to start functioning normally. And it takes from person to person as to when do they accept that I have to work within this condition. There are many such examples. This is again from Koklaben Hospital. This is from Hyderabad. This gentleman came to meet me in Patna, and we can actually capture through that neuro headset certain things like facial expressions, emotions, and certain thoughts for which we can train. These are thoughts which are related to movement coming from motor cortex region of the brain. I'm not going into details of this. The one thing that I'm trying now is, I'm not getting time nowadays, but I've been trying on and off, is try to get people in vegetative state to communicate. I've got many requests for that. The three people have tried, not yet successful, but I just wanted to share the thing, because it's important to share what is not successful also. So in this case, we're trying to capture the brain activity in real time and then trying to ask the person to imagine some scene. And those two scenes, we select those two scenes for which the brain patterns will be very different. So you can distinguish from the brain pattern. and then ask them to communicate yes and no. There have been some, at least one place in UK I have seen some success result using MRI. I was using a cheap neuro headset. I have not been successful, but I don't get time to try it out. Once I got hang of the brain-computer interface, then I said that can I identify learning disability in a child using EEG waves at a very early age. So I came across a work done by a researcher which says that if you capture the beta waves and theta waves and take sub-band of beta, beta 1 to theta ratio, if that is lower, then the child may have learning disability. In fact, now sometimes people also reverse it, they call theta by beta, and if it is higher than that. So beta 1 by theta lower or theta by beta higher, the child may have learning disability. So this can be done very early stage, even before the child starts to go to school. Then the next question I asked myself, that can I improve in this condition? So I came across a technique called, it's not brain entrainment, it's called brain wave entrainment. And advanced version of that, neurofeedback, in which both of these are same thing, except that the feedback one, you have an EEG device monitoring the effect of that. Here through audio visual stimulus, actually you start to control the brain waves. I'll come to this again. But I also found that our own ancient techniques for yoga, pranayama, kundalini chakra also actually control brain in their own ways. Some were efficient in some condition, others were efficient in some other condition. So I started to use some of these to help children with Down syndrome, ADD, ADHD and so on. But also I found that I could help adults. And the first person to be helped was one of my students who missed my exam because of depression. And she was taken out by her parents. And in fact, I was giving a talk on this only in a conference. When I came back, I found that she had missed. And when I talked to her later on, I found that the depression was the reason. So I gave her a sound, which are called binaural beats, where actually the two frequencies to the two ears are slightly different. And the beat wave that is produced in the brain, actually you try to match it to the particular brain wave that you want to excite. So you want to put the person to sleep, you go to the delta waves, which are very low frequency, 0.5 hertz to 4 hertz range. And similarly, other ranges are there. So I gave her a sound which allowed her to go to good sleep, get good sleep, and then her condition started to improve. In fact, I still remember that she wrote on my Facebook that, "Professor, I'm feeling in heaven and everybody should try this out." And then I could start to help people with insomnia, depression and so on, and both of these are related also in many cases. And because a lot of times you have depression because of lack of sleep or stress. In those cases, these things can help without any medicine. Okay, this one I will leave out, but Saurindu probably will remember. This is Dr. Vasish Narayan Singh, who was a very famous mathematician of my school. He worked in TIFR also for a short time, IIT Kanpur, then Indian Statistical Institute, did for a PhD from Berkeley, and then he developed schizophrenia. I've been helping him, and now he's in condition that he can play tabla at least. You can see him playing tabla. And every month I transfer money to his nephew's account to rent a house in Patna, actually through my school alumni network. I'll not go into details. The interesting part was, this was surprise Satya that I wanted to keep. I had a problem with my gallbladder where I had stones in 2012. And normally when you have that stone and you have severe pain, the doctors will do surgery and remove the gallbladder itself. And I thought that, is there a way that I can avoid that surgery? I came across a book which was written by a German fellow, Andreas Moritz, who had come to India to learn Ayurveda at the age of 21. He learned Ayurveda, solved his own health problem. He said that nobody could help me from age of 6, he had a lot of problems. Then he solved his own health problem and he devoted the rest of his life on Ayurveda. He has written many books. He moved Germany to US. So I came across his book and I could actually remove my stones without any surgery using that process, which is based on Ayurveda, but he did further experiments and improved that, made it easy, you can do it in home and so on and so forth. Now, I was helping a lady. She had come to me through some thing that, who had severe problem. For 15 years, she had severe mental health challenge. She had suicidal tendencies. She could not sleep for 7 to 10 days. She could not retain things in memory. So, for example, she wanted to give CA exam for 15 years. She used to fill forms twice a year every day, 30 times she filled. But she said that, if I study, I understand, but nothing retains in my brain. Okay. Can you help me? So I had given her something which will allow her to sleep. Then she came to me for the exam problem. She said, maybe you can help me some way. I gave her another thing. And then it was March 2013, I think, if I'm not wrong, March 20, 2013, when I gave her this recipe that I used for cleaning my gallbladder, and I found that in the book that if you clean your inner organs, your gallbladder, your liver, your kidney, colon, that 80 to 90% of the diseases disappear. Okay, so I started to promote this through social media and so on. And anybody I came across, I told about this. I told her also. For 3 weeks, I did not hear anything from her. And since it was a very sensitive case, I would not force her to do anything. I would just suggest and keep quiet. If she wants to do it, let her do it. Surprisingly, after 3 weeks, she came to me and she called me up and said that she has now been cured. So she's saying that 7th April onwards, that was this 7th April 2013, whatever I studied, I would be able to retain my mind. And for the first time in 15 years, I could solve 60 numerical problems in 4 to 5 hours. And she started to give exams and everything. So it was very surprising to me. In fact, my blog is still has it as a miraculous story. Okay. And you were talking about Dr. Samir Brahmachari. I was having discussion on this, and he told me it is due to ammonia. And then I went to details. I understood why scientifically it had happened. But then I realized that actually our body is not in isolation. These are a holistic thing. So your liver, gallbladder, everything, and the kidney, for example, liver and kidney, they detoxify blood. The blood carries nutrients and oxygen, goes to brain, it carries the impurity out and keeps circulating back and forth. So if my organs are not doing its task, the impurity level starts to go up in the brain and can start to create a lot of problem, brain fogging, memory loss, and all those things. So if you are able to clean your inner organs and the functions are restored, then a lot of problems disappear. I don't want to go into details of this, but this is the book actually, and you can download from net, as well as you can buy hard copies of these. It's there on my blog. I have also put this link here. Then I realized that our learning system needs to be holistic. We cannot segregate our food, body, and mind. This has to be looked at in an integrated way, because nowadays what happens, we sleep anytime, very late we sleep, we get up anytime, we eat any kind of food. But all of this is actually linked together. So we have been now working on this aspect, trying to create an approach to learning which integrates all of this together in a way that we maximize the learning capacity of each individual. And 3 years back, we did a workshop on this. And now my elder brother is retired just a few days back. So he's going to devote full time on this. He's shifting to the school campus itself. So in the conclusion, combining India's traditional knowledge with the modern science is a winning combination. We need to focus on real problems, and if we focus on real problems, a lot of innovations happen, and I personally see that there's tremendous potential for innovation to help people with disability and old age. So stop here. Thank you very much. Do a few minutes or? Gallbladder stone. Yeah.
What should it do? How did the stone disappear? What should it do?
And it's expelled actually. You kind of induce, you take a lot of fat and you prepare the body for that. So to digest the fat, you know, it injects bile juice. In that process, stones come out. And you dilate the common bile duct by using Epsom salt. And so it comes out, it will go out. So it will not get stuck. So you prepare the body for, it's a 7 days process. It's not guaranteed that it will come out the first time, so you might have to repeat it a few times. The gallbladder and liver gets cleaned together. For kidney, there's a parallel thing to do, and colon, you have to typically get it done outside, like here also people do. Colon cleaning is done, or colon hydrotherapy is called, colonic irrigation is called.
That stone actually came out through?
Yeah, through stool it comes out. You take fat so that the bile juice, the gallbladder, compacts to inject the bile juice. And in that process, only stones come out. And so you have pain if it gets stuck.
Is it a well-established process, or how did you get into that process?
So, no, that process that was mentioned in this book, which is based on Ayurveda. And Ayurveda, they use ghee and other things. He's changed to olive oil and few other things. So he did his own experiment. I did ultrasound before and after and demonstrated that it happened. My wife will not believe it first, so I had to show her that the ultrasound. Then she also did it, and she also got out. Now hundreds of people have done across the country, and hundreds I know that thousands of people would have done through indirect thing. Process I have described in summary on my blog, which is ranjan.in, but the book gives all the details, and it's worthwhile to read the book actually.
Can you move back the
title of title. Sorry. Yeah. Or if you go to my blog site, ranjan.in, you can see that also.
This approach of cleansing the liver, is does it also help in, let's say, things like jaundice and so on? Or no?
See, there are two types of jaundice. One is the obstructive jaundice, in which case actually this happens that your common bile duct, something gets stuck. So this also happens because of gallbladder stone that gets stuck and then you have nothing moving. So this is the obstructive one. And in that case, what happens that if you take Epsom salt drink, it dilates the common bile duct and allows the stone to go out. But the other one, I am not sure that will help. But basically, it's like this. If you go to a doctor, they will tell that all these bodies, organs are self-cleansing. They take care of themselves. But
this is a well-defined terminology.
It is being used. It is used.
Something well-defined entity which is not desirable, it is already deposited in this organ, you want to remove it. Or it is a general term that which doesn't really have particular quantitative way or quantitative.
Two terms are used.
The cleansing.
Yeah, so basically you have toxicity in the body, those are defined in some way, and detoxing is a very popular term nowadays.
Popular term is well, talking medically or physiologically speaking, is it well defined?
Well, you see, the medical community always opposes these things, okay, and there is a lot of controversy on these. If the same thing, the two doctors have written, you go to Hoax Slayer, you'll find that this is a hoax, okay, but now I understand scientifically, and I have gone through this process myself and hundreds of other people, and the point they are making is totally wrong. But you know, so there is a whole medical community, people beat me up, my own friends, that if you do this, our job will be going, you know. What we need to do is to prove this scientifically. But in my case, of course, I have seen the result. I did ultrasound before and after, and not only for gallbladder, I have hundreds of cases where different kind of problems. I already talked about a mental health challenge. A lady just had a back pain, it went away, weight loss, skin glow, you know, all kind of metabolism improved. So there's all kind of things. Please read the book actually. No, I just can't describe that whole thing because it describes the full thing in great detail.
Well, Ranjan is asking,
can you define cleansing means what exactly?
See, in the case that you talked about, there was a gallstone, so there was a specific problem that was solved.
Right.
Okay. Now, can one kind of, there will be associated benefits which may have come to you after that.
Right.
Let's not talk about that.
Yeah.
But what, when you say something is being cleansed, this is one specific example of what is being cleansed.
Right.
Can we say what else?
Yeah, so both the liver and kidney, there's a like kidney or membrane kind of thing. So you can also, you know, clean them up, and there's a process.
What is the meaning of cleansing something?
So it's just like your air conditioner is a filter, and then there's, you know, dust that accumulates. So you need to clean it up periodically, the same way. And what kind of thing that is defined, if you read about the kidney part, what kind of things go there, that is also well defined. Liver also, it is there. So if you go into details, I would suggest that you read in the book. I'm not an expert, I'm a practitioner. But you can go through that and you will see that what needs to be done. Also, what precautions we should take so that these conditions do not happen, that is also described in the book. But that lady that I mentioned, and what Dr. Samir Brahmachari explained to me was ammonia, that's also well understood actually now. Because what happens that if livers, the ammonia is created in digestion process, that ammonia gets converted to urea by liver, and then urea goes out through urine out of the body. If for some reason that task is not being done, the ammonia level starts to go up in the body, and then with the blood actually it starts to cross the brain blood-brain barrier and go into brain. And if ammonia goes into brain, then it creates havoc with the brain. And actually, you might remember the hair dye and other things, or the B2 parlors, if you go today, they'll talk about ammonia-free things. And they have become much more costlier. Like earlier, the hair dye will cost 200 rupees, now it's costing, say, 500 rupees. That's probably because of this fact that ammonia was there, and if it through skin, if it went into the blood, then it would use to. So once this was discovered 10-15 years back, so this, we could relate that if liver could be cleaned up and started to do this task, then the brain started to improve. So this is how we could understand that. Earlier I thought it was a miracle thing. So each of these actually, there's a, they've described in the book, the gentleman has described in the book how it has happened scientifically. So you can look at it, and the symptoms also is identified, and what problem is causing that, that also is.
So there was that intervention that you mentioned for insomnia.
Yeah.
You said that you give two different,
They're different sound patterns. Yes, 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 slightly, yeah.
And the beat
right.
is matched to the delta.
Yeah, 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 roughly, yeah, yes. So what happens that due to neuroplasticity, the brain starts to follow that external stimuli. So if you give, say, 1 hertz, the brain will tend to, you know, it takes about 7 to 8 minutes to the star effect to, you know, show up. And so about 15, 20 minutes, if you use it, you'll go into very deep sleep. And then you get up in the morning, you'll feel very refreshed. This is something anybody can try, and a lot of people are trying. In fact, a few months back, I gave a talk, and there were students there, and one of them came to me that he has problem. And just a few days back, I was in Gujarat again. He came to meet me especially saying that he is feeling much better. Now he shared with all his friends at exam time that using it to get good sleep. So you know, you're not using any medicine and you are getting a much better sleep. So that's very useful for many other things, including your memory, concentration, everything is in much better shape. You will get better sleep.
Sir, if I can make a comment. So the thing is, of course, the part that you described, your journey, science, going to technology, and also using it, particularly the part where you kind of applied this very, very successfully to cases where probably they are kind of it now. But at the same time, I think the general thing, if I can understand what the discussion is, maybe there could be an attempt where maybe empirically something is kind of working out, there may be some things what people can call miracles or otherwise, but there should be some attempt where kind of little bit of reasoning and also like what he says about quantitative kind of thing. Is there not scope for such kind of, may not be by you.
Yeah, I mean, so current government has enhanced the budget of Department of Ayush, which is set up for this purpose, by multifolds. I think there are 200, 300 crores, they have jumped to 1500 crores. So there is a focus on integrating Indian science of medicine with the modern thing. This is where all of this lies. I will give my own example, unfortunately. For example, in Ayurveda, there is a process called Panchkarma, okay, where one of the things is that you do this Shirodhara, where you drip oil somewhere here, okay. And Ayurveda company chairman told me that, you know, it activates pineal gland. I told him, do you have any proof? He said that I don't have any proof, but in Shastras it is mentioned, so we do it. So I said, all right, let me do one thing. I'll monitor the brain and you do this and I will see what is the change happening. If I can correlate whatever you're doing and I can establish this, then of course, maybe that you have the best optimized system. First, we'll establish that it's working. Second, we can optimize that, you know, what drop size, what rate and which oil better and so on. Unfortunately, the gentleman expired, so we could not continue this experiment. So there's a lot of such a scope of doing things which will actually establish this. But in my case, of course, I had to convince my wife herself, and I did ultrasound to show that actually it has gone out. And many other people have also seen the benefit. I roughly understand this part, but there are many other benefits that we see is also described in the book. Of course, one can establish all of that through scientific study. That, of course, is desirable. So combining our traditional knowledge with modern science, that's what I mentioned at the end, is the important thing.
Okay, sir. So let's once again thank today's
speaker. Sure. Yeah, you can keep one in the library. Okay. Oh, I forgot to take a picture here. So just, okay, no problem. You can just do a fake one.